Okay, tonight, this morning's jamming is the dog fight.
I did not choose this.
Basically, it's material versus spiritual.
Happiness.
I won't explain it because Mother Emily is about to do the class.
So there was a group of friends. I don't know if they were members of the Pandavasena or not, but they were friends. And they needed a whole bunch of things to buy at the shop. Did I say that right? The shop?
Shop.
Yes, there's a shop. So they needed to go shopping. So they get in their vehicle, and with them, each member of this group of friends has a long, long list, because they haven't gone shopping in a long time. So the list is very, very long, at least 1, 2, maybe 4 or 5 pages long. Everybody has a very, very long list, and they're going to a very big store. Are you blessed or cursed with Walmarts in your country?
Yes.
You have them. Okay. So do you have the super ones that have the food and everything in the one store? You have those monstrosities. All right. So that's where this group of friends is going. They're going to one. Do you have those in France also?
Hypermarket.
Do you have hypermarkets in France? Hypermarché. Okay. Whatever. So these friends are going to this hypermarché. I'm probably just massacring the language. And with these very, very big lists. And they come in the store, and they're in the store because they have such a long list. They're in the store for a very, very, very long time. Just hours and hours and hours. In fact, all these friends, they lose track of the time. They can't even remember when they came into the store. In fact, they've forgotten where they parked their car in the car park. They've just absorbed in the store in doing their shopping. So as they're going down the aisles, they're getting things and putting it in their cart. Of course, they need a rather big cart because it's a group of friends and they have a very big list. And as they're going down the list, each person is putting things in the cart, and they're going all around the store. So finally they come to the checkout, and the friends are comparing on their list, and each person on their list was only able to find a few items. They had a very, very long list, and somehow, even though they were at a super store, huge store, that's supposed to be stocked with everything, somehow or other, many things were just not in stock. And they kept, do you have this? Do you have this? Or there were some things that were in stock, but they found somehow the price was very high. And even though they had thought that they brought sufficient money with them, still, they weren't able to purchase a lot of the things. So either the things just weren't in stock, or they look at the price and they say, I really want this. But they get out their money and they say, oh, I can't afford it. It's too expensive. So they have just a small amount of things on their list, and they think, well, where did we come from anyway? Oh yes, we came in a car, because they had been there like all day. And they finally get in the car and they go back. These friends would stay in the same flat together. And they came back to their list that they got. And as they unloaded it, they looked at the rest of the list and they're thinking, oh, I really wanted those other things so much. And they're sitting around talking about all the things on the list that weren't at the store, or some of the things that were there that were too expensive. And they're having discussions long into the night before they even unpacked their what they did buy about, oh, we really wanted this new player for our MP3s, but it cost £500 and we just couldn't afford it. And oh, I saw this thing, and you could play your music on a box in your pocket, and it had a Bluetooth device, and it would send the messages to head. This is real, by the way. These things are real. It would send the messages to earphones in really cool-looking sunglasses, and then it would also connect to my mobile phone, so I could play music. And it would go to my sunglasses, and then when I would get a call, it would pause the music, and I could listen to the call, and then when I'd hang up, the music would start again, And I could just by pressing a little button on my sunglasses, I could go forward or backward, or I could hold the call and take a message. It was £1,000, and I couldn't get it. And when am I going to be able to buy this? And I really want to look cool with my sunglasses and my music. All night long, they stayed up all night, just looking at all the things they couldn't buy. And they slept maybe a little, maybe an hour. And then in the morning, they woke up, and they started to unwrap the things that they did buy. Some of the packages were very hard to open. And, you know, you ever find these packages and you just can't open them? You have to find a scissors or a knife, and get the thing open. And one of the friends found that when he opened one of his packages, he had to open it so violently that he ruined the thing inside. It was all broken. He opened it, it was all broken. And oh, no, I have to go back to the store and buy another one. And they probably won't take it back because they'll say it's my fault that I ruined it. And he was so upset. And then as they were opening them and trying to use it, and one of them was able to afford this fancy thing with the mobile phone and the music box and the sunglasses, and he puts it on, and, you know, he turns it on, but then the sunglasses are so dark that he can't see anything in the room, and he doesn't have any other way to play the music, and he thinks, well, this is only going to work when it's sunny out. Now what am I going to do? You know, I wanted this for a year, and I saved my money, and I got it, and the other friends were saying, I wanted one. He said, oh, but it doesn't even work right. And as everyone's opening things, they find that of the things they brought back from their list, about three-quarters of them, there's something they don't like about it. You know, it's just it's the wrong size, it doesn't quite fit, or the instruction manual is about, you know, 3 meters high, and they can't figure it out, and it's written by somebody who only speaks Chinese, and they're trying to write English, and they can't understand how to use it. You know, so they're going through this stuff, and they finally look at each other after about 3 or 4 hours of unpacking and playing with everything, and they say, well, what did you get that works? And everybody makes a little pile of the things that they got that are just perfect. You know, I mean, just absolutely perfect. Now look, I got this pair of shoes, and they fit me, and they're fantastic. So this group of friends ends up with some things they're going to have to take back to the shop. Some things they're going to have to just throw away because they can't get a refund for it. Some things they're going to use it, but it's just not right. And then they have a pile of things that's just absolutely perfect. Exactly, exactly, exactly what they wanted. And they're feeling so happy with these things. Oh, look, this just pair of shoes. Exactly, exactly perfect. And the other one says, yes, I got this thing for the kitchen, and it just, oh, I love this stuff. Love the way it works. It's my favorite thing. But then they're thinking, you know, after I wear these shoes for a while, right, because the next day comes, I put on the shoes, and you wear them out on the street, and then what starts to happen to these beautiful shoes? They start to get dirty, and they start to get worn, right? And as they're using all these things that are perfect, after some time goes by, the things start to wear out. They get old. And then they're thinking, I guess we need to go back to the shop. Because all these things have gotten old or obsolete, and now I need to find something new. One day, a visitor came from very far away, a very distant relative. A relative of one of this group of friends, hadn't seen them for a very long time, and comes and says, I see that you have piles of stuff in your house. They said, yes, this is a pile of stuff that doesn't work. They said, why don't you throw it away? Oh, well, we're hoping someday we'll get it to work. And this pile of stuff, this is what we're using, and it's kind of falling apart. And their friend says, you know, there's a place you can go where you find everything you want, and it all works, and it doesn't fall apart. And they say, no, no, that's not possible. But one of the friends is a little bit thoughtful and says, I think I'd like to try to find that place. So I would like you now, with your two circles, and your overlap, you don't have much room. If you don't have much room in the overlap, you may have to write something and draw arrows. Be creative, as long as you understand. I'd like you to write down, what are the different qualities of material happiness in your material circle? And what are the qualities of spiritual happiness in your spiritual circle? And if there are any qualities that apply to both material happiness and spiritual happiness, then they should go in the middle. Right? So you can do it by yourself if you want to, or you can do it with one other person, or 10 people, or whatever you like. Okay? So we'll work on this for about 7 minutes. No. What are the qualities of the happiness itself? So material happiness is life. Spiritual happiness is life. What are the qualities of the happiness itself? Okay, I'm sure that we could go on, but let's come and do this as a big group now. And this is, it's not that there's just one correct list here. First, I'd like us to look at the intersection, at the middle section, things that are common to both spiritual happiness and material happiness. So whoever wants to contribute something. Yes. Excuse me?
Dualities?
How would you explain that there's dualities in spiritual happiness?
That's what I also really want to say, right now, we're open to that, right now.
So you're perceiving that there's dualities in spiritual happiness at this point?
Yeah, for me.
For you, it seems like that.
Like,
can you give an example?
Yeah, I come last night being all that different, and then this morning my neighbor.
Yes. Okay, so there's some similarity in physical appearance, that a person who's feeling material happiness is smiling, and a person who's feeling spiritual happiness is smiling. Okay, thank you. Yes.
They lead to a sense of attachment.
Oh, very nice. They lead to a sense of attachment. I really like that. I'm so glad we did this instead of my just telling you what I came up with, because I never would have thought that. There's a wonderful story by Jiva Goswami that when Radharani is being crowned the queen of Vrindavan, she's given a abhishek, a bath, and worship. And at the very, very end, she gives a benediction. She said, "May all bound creatures become liberated." And Radharani's friends became very upset because they're bound to her in love. And they didn't want to be liberated from those attachments of love. So yes, both we are not impersonalists. The impersonalists are interested in becoming free from all attachments, whereas we are interested in becoming attached to Krishna. So yes, they both increase attachment. That is what, thank you very much. Okay, someone else, something in the middle. Yes.
Both require service to someone.
Oh, very nice. That both require service. You have to serve your senses, at least, or some other living being for material happiness. And for spiritual happiness, you have to serve Krishna and his devotees. Yes?
They both require a lot of endeavor and determination, although not for
people. Ah, very nice. They both require endeavor and determination, although the quality is different. Actually, Srila Prabhupada said that until we reach the stage of steadiness in Krishna consciousness, it will be a hard struggle with determination. Please remember that. Okay? Until we reach the stage of steadiness in Krishna consciousness, it will be a hard struggle with determination. That doesn't mean there are no rest areas. Just like when we were driving here in the coach, at one point we pulled over to a... Do you call them rest areas?
Service stations.
We mean petrol stations by that. So some place where you can relax and get something to eat and it's pleasant and you're not on the road. So even going to the stage of nishta, to the stage of steadiness, there will be times that there's just sweetness. But as Prabhupada said, after the stage of steadiness, everything happens automatically one after the other. So at a certain stage of spiritual advancement, it no longer requires hard endeavor and great determination. It's just natural. But in the beginning, it does require that. Okay, something else that's in the middle, that's common, yes.
They're both involved the same sort of activities like eating, sleeping.
Oh, okay, so the external activities are very similar. Right? One is eating, one is dancing, one is talking. It's not the external activities, the bodily activities themselves, there's not some huge significant change. Okay? Somebody else. Something in the middle, yes.
There's variety in both.
Oh, thank you. Yes, there's great variety in both. So material happiness, can people experience material happiness by crying?
Yes.
Are some of the movies and books that people go to and read for entertainment, are they sad?
Yes.
Why do people buy them? Do people enjoy reading sad books?
About other people.
Do they enjoy going to sad movies?
Yes.
They're walking out of the theater crying. And someone says, was it a good movie? Oh, it was good. Do people go to scary movies?
Yes.
Do people pay to go on scary rides?
Yes.
Do they read scary books?
Yes.
Isn't that strange?
Yep.
I mean, do we think of fear as a pleasant emotion? No. So why are people paying to become frightened? Because there's varieties of material happiness, is my point. Under certain circumstances, fear is a cause of pleasure. To somebody, I mean, there's somebody paying for it. So in spiritual life also, there's variety. It's not that in the spiritual happiness that everyone is just going around, forever. Frankly, that is boring. And many people do not take to spiritual life because they think that spiritual happiness is something like that. You know, just floating. There's varieties of spiritual happiness. So, like one time there was this poisonous snake in the Yamuna River, and Krishna went to fight with the snake, and the snake was holding Krishna tightly. And all of Krishna's devotees thought, because Krishna can't die, he's God, but out of love they're thinking, oh, maybe he'll die. And they were feeling such fear and anxiety that they were fainting. But that fear and anxiety was giving them extreme happiness. Or when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, Krishna grew up in the village of Vrindavan, and he leaves Vrindavan, and people, they're just crying with sadness. They're falling on the ground. They're so apparently unhappy. But Sanatana Goswami describes that this happiness dances on the heads of all other happiness. So there's great variety in the emotion. Spiritual happiness is not just one kind of emotion. In fact, the varieties of spiritual happiness are even greater. But okay, they both have variety. Thank you. Anything else that's in the middle? Especially someone who hasn't yet said something. Anything else that's in the middle?
Love.
Love. All right. Of course, material love is not really love, but at least some appearance of love. So happiness, there's some relationships going on there. Okay, very nice. Anything else that we have in the middle? Yes?
You have to work really hard to attain whatever you want.
Okay, I think that's similar to what this Prabhu said. You have to work really hard to attain it. And as I said, at a certain point in spiritual life, it's not like that. But in the beginning, it is. There's an object of love. Okay, there's some object. With material happiness, there's some object of gratification. With spiritual, there's an object of love. Yes?
There's rules and regulations you have to follow, too.
Oh, there's rules and regulations you have to follow. Again, this is true spiritually only in the beginning. at the higher stages of love, the only rule is love. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there's only two rules in the spiritual world. Love Krishna and don't envy him, that's all, no other rules. But to attain spiritual happiness, you need to follow rules in the beginning. And to attain material happiness, certainly you have to go through some process. I mean, even if you want to attain material happiness by being a criminal, still there's ways to go about it. Right? You can't just rob a building anyway, then you'll get captured by the police. You have to follow the rules of being sneaky. Anything else in the middle? Yes. Oh, very nice. There is some stimulus, something that induces you to go for that. Very nice. In Krishna Bhakti, there's also stimuli for ecstatic love. So Krishna's fragrance, Krishna's softness, Krishna's pastimes, they stimulate feelings of spiritual love. And materially also, there's something that induces us. Some friend tells us about something, or we see an advert or something, there's some stimulus. Anything else in the middle? Yes. Ah, it is a matter of choice that one can choose. Anything else? Yes?
Both stages have powerful people and powerful books. Like, material has someone like Einstein.
Are you guys four?
They're in 17.
Oh. I thought I could, you know, sing and dance or something. Getting bored. So you said in each category, there are
powerful
leaders. Oh, you guys are so smart. So I never would have thought of these things. So for both spiritual and material happiness, there's powerful people and books and, in fact, whole institutions dedicated. So if you want to become materially happy, you can go to the bookstore and you can find, you know, advice, do it this way, do it this way, do it this way. And there's a chariot of material happiness and there's a chariot of spiritual happiness. Yes, that's very nice. Yes.
When you take either one seriously, you develop a dislike for the other one.
Wow. Yes. Oh, very nice. He said, when you take either one seriously, you develop a dislike for the other one. In fact, when you take either one seriously, the other one appears to be not real. The other one appears not to exist. People who are very absorbed in material happiness, spiritual happiness seems like a myth, some made-up thing that people figure out just to bewilder themselves. And when you're absorbed in spiritual happiness, material happiness seems also like a shadow. You also have service?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Make you guys work too hard. Yes.
So in both cases, the highest is the rasa or relationship.
Ah, the highest is relationship. Yes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in material happiness, he categorizes two kinds of material happiness. Physical pleasure, so relationship of the gross senses, we touch something, we taste something, we see something, we hear something. That, of course, is available even to animals. And then the higher level of material happiness, which he compares to heavenly happiness, is dealing with emotions and thoughts. The happiness we get when we discuss ideas, the happiness that we get when we're in some loving relationship with somebody. So spiritual happiness also, the highest understanding of spiritual relationship is also, spiritual happiness is also in relationship. Okay, I'm sure we could have more, but this is, I've found that both of them involve both behaviors, feelings, and thoughts, which we'll get into more day after tomorrow. All right? What are qualities? Now we're going to see if we can find opposites. So anything that someone says on one side, we're going to see if we can find something opposite on the other side. So someone could give me a quality just of material happiness. Yes?
Temporary.
And spiritual is? Eternal. Okay. Anything else? It's just material. Yes?
Seeking pleasure.
You're seeking personal pleasure. And spiritual?
Krishna's
pleasure. Okay? Somebody else, yes? Very limited. And spiritual is? Unlimited. Material is limited in the sense that if you had your favorite food, and you ate your favorite food, Actually, I was just, I read one time a true story like this, of this man who was working when he was a teenager in the summers for 3 years in an ice cream shop. And, you know, all the flavors of ice cream, however many, 40, 50 flavors of ice cream, and they would make the cones and he'd put on the toppings. And he said that the benefit he got from working in the ice cream shop was that they were allowed to have as much free ice cream as they could eat. And he loved ice cream, so he ate ice cream. This is a true story. He ate ice cream for breakfast, and he ate ice cream for lunch, and he ate ice cream for dinner. Every day, the whole summer, for 3 summers. And he said, what happened was, that would all you would eat all day. So at the end of every day, he said, you'd feel a little nauseated. You understand?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But he ignored that and kept eating the ice cream. Well, after some time, that feeling of being nauseated became associated in his mind and his body with ice cream. So after 3 years of that, he couldn't eat ice cream. Not only could he not eat ice cream, he said he couldn't eat any kind of sweets, and eventually he couldn't eat any kind of desserts at all. So the rest of his life, he was writing this story about how difficult it was for him when he ate meals with other people. Because the other people were always pressuring him, oh, you just try this cake, you just try this meal. So, material happiness is like that, that if you keep doing it and keep doing the same thing, it gets, first of all, it gets what?
Boring.
And then after you do it, if you push past the boring point, it becomes revolting. It becomes actually sickening. And that is why in material life, we do something called bhoga tyaga. Bhoga means enjoyment, tyaga means renunciation. You know, and sometimes we think this is very spiritual. Now you hear sometimes devotees will say, well, sometimes I like to dress very simply. There, I met actually one lady at the manor was telling me this. She said, now I'm becoming very renounced in my old age. She said, you see, I'm just wearing a blanket for a charm. But then after a few days, then I take out all my nice clothes and my jewelry and I wear those for a while. And but then I always go back to my blanket. I didn't want to say anything, and I thought, it's bhoga tyaga. All it is. You know, that you eat pizza, and then you have to have a break from pizza in order to enjoy it again. You know, you work, and then you take a vacation. But then you have to go back to work. Not just to earn a livelihood. Even people like Bill Gates still work. You know, there's this bhoga tyaga. I enjoy something, then I have to get away from it for a while. So it seems new. Then I can enjoy it again. Then I have to get away from it. Then I can enjoy it. Then I have to get away from it. Then I can enjoy it again. Because the thing itself, it loses its... I lived for 10 years at the Detroit Temple, which used to be owned by Lawrence Fisher of the car body manufacturers. And when you first go in the building, you notice that there's 24 karat gold inlaid in the floor. It's an amazing place. The ceilings are works of art. I mean, the whole place, everywhere you look, you're just astounded by the beauty of this place. But after, you know, a year or two, you don't even notice it anymore. When some guest comes and they're looking, you go, oh yeah, this is kind of nice hearing this. I this happened at the manor. I was speaking to one of you, actually. And I was saying, the grounds here are so amazingly beautiful. This is such an incredible place. And the other devotee said, oh, yeah, this is kind of nice. So whatever we're exposed to after a while, it loses its oomph. We stop noticing it, right? Or we notice the difficulties with it. This happens in long-term relationships also. You know, the boy and girl are like, oh. And then after they live together for a while, they're like, I find attraction in this person anyway. So whereas spirituality is not like that. It's not that, you know, the residents of Vrindavan see Krishna and they're thinking, oh yeah, we saw him yesterday. Well, now we want to see somebody new. It's not like that. And with Krishna, there's, of course, Krishna, there's meeting and separation, but they're both varieties of ecstasy. That's simply the variety of flavor. It's not a renouncing and enjoying, yes.
Is there also a sense, though, that materially, you say that it's like a flame of desire, so if you indulge yourself materially, then you'll still, maybe not in the same thing, but you'll still feel like indulging yourself more materially?
That's initially. He said that it's like a flame, that we hear that when you feed sense gratification, the desire for it increases. Yes, but you still can't have it all the time. You know, if you try to do exactly the same kind of sense gratification all the time, it does become repulsive. But that repulsion is not, it's not a deep, permanent thing. It doesn't mean you're renounced. Prabhupada compares that to graveyard renunciation. You know, someone you love has died. And there at the graveyard, as you're cremating the body or burying the body, you say, oh, I have no interest in material life. You know, that kind of apparent renunciation, that's sort of like you just eat a big feast, and an hour later you say, oh, I'm fasting, I'm very renounced. You just had 10 gulabjamuns, and someone gives another, no, I'm not interested in sex. That's not. But what you're talking about also as a material quality is that, and that's, in one way there's some similarity, because the more you serve Krishna, the more you want to serve Krishna. But it's the difference is that in spiritual life, although the more you have it, the more you want it, you also feel totally satisfied. So it's something like, in the Bible, King David said, my cup runs over. So something like that. Spiritual happiness, you're completely full. You're completely satisfied, but it's overflowing. And therefore you want more and more and more and more and more and more and more, and it doesn't get old. Whereas materially, it's more like this bottomless pit. And the more you put into it, the more you just, it drives the feeling of emptiness. I remember one devotee was telling me, he said, yeah, you know, I got into watching television because I was feeling lonely. But then as soon as I turn it off, I feel even more lonely. So material happiness is something like that. We do something to satisfy us, and at the end, you know, you feel even more dissatisfied. Okay, something else that we can, in the, just the material, yeah. Yes. Materially, it's possible for it to be useless. In fact, how much of the time do we work hard for something and we don't get what we want? What's the percentage? 80, 90, I'm hearing. Is that about accurate? Is it at least 50% of the time that the things we work for sometimes very hard, we just don't ever achieve them? Is there anyone here who achieves what they work for materially over 50% of the time consistently? So whereas spiritually it's not like that. As spiritually it's not frustrated. Of course, this was Arjuna's question. He said, can I try for spiritual happiness and fail? And Krishna says no. Because once you try for spiritual happiness, you will ultimately be successful. Okay, something else that's just material happiness. See, someone who hasn't said something yet. And the reason I'm asking you to participate is that empirical research shows that the more a person participates, the more they learn and the more they retain their learning. So it's for your benefit that I'm asking you to participate. Yes?
It's more of a like instant pleasure, whereas like in spirituality, it can be acquired to be instant, but it takes a while to get there.
So material pleasure can be more instantaneous than it can be. Well, in the neophyte stage, it seems like that. In the neophyte stage, we have to undergo some austerity. And Krishna says, mode of passion happiness is like pleasure in the beginning and it turns to poison, whereas in the mode of goodness it's like poison at the beginning but it turns to pleasure. But that's, for the conditioned soul, there is that difference. But there's some material happiness, as we said, you have to work for a long time. Yes?
Secure.
Which?
The material.
Material is secure?
Yeah.
It's secure? It's not secure. What is it? Is it secure or not secure? Okay, so let's say that I'm getting some happiness from eating. Okay? In what way is that happiness not secure? My ability to enjoy through eating, in what way is that not secure?
Yes.
I'll be hungry again, but that's different. My ability to enjoy by eating. You can develop diseases.
You can't eat unlimited. You can only eat until you're full.
Well, that's what you were saying before, but I'm talking about your very ability to enjoy through eating. Can any of us develop a disease at any time which would stop us for the rest of our life from enjoying through eating?
Yes.
Or do we know that?
Yes.
Now, we're not thinking about that every time we eat, but we know that. Do we know people who have lost the ability to enjoy by eating?
Diabetes.
Yeah. Sometimes people lose that ability because their diseases prevent them from eating anything tasty. In the later stages of my mother's life, she could not even drink water. She had Parkinson's disease, which affects your muscles, and she couldn't swallow properly. And if she drank water, it would go into her lungs. So they had to mix the water with potato starch for her to drink the water. Can you imagine if all the water that you drank had to be mixed with potato starch? It was very hard for her to quench her thirst. And toward the end, she couldn't even swallow more than a little tiny spoon of water at a time. And she lost the ability to eat entirely. They wanted to put a tube into her stomach to feed her, and she said, no, I'm 89. If I can't eat, it's time for me to go. She couldn't eat. She lost the ability to swallow. I knew one devotee, she's now since left her body, who could not eat at all. She had to have a tube stuck into her chest, and she had a little bath of liquid nourishment that she would have to hook up to this tube two or three times a day. She couldn't eat any personal, and that was how she ate. Or sometimes people can lose taste sensation, right? We could get into a car accident and our mouth could be broken. We wouldn't be able to do so many things. And we all live in constant, unconscious fear. You know, we have some hope. Well, this can happen to Ermola's mother, but it's not going to happen to me. Yeah, I'll be able to eat globulins until I'm 97. But is this true with any kind of material happiness that we have? I mean, even just the happiness we get from feeling I can walk from one place to another. You know, if you slip on the steps and I don't have that happiness anymore. And this, it happens to people around us, it happens to us, but we're in constant fear of losing the ability. Therefore, no material happiness is secure. Whatever we have, I mean, if you just think of the things in our life, each of us, just think for a minute. Think of the two or three things in your life that you really, really take pleasure in. Are they secure? Could you lose it today? Spiritual happiness is not like that. Spiritual happiness is part of the soul, and the soul cannot, we are the soul. There's nothing that can hurt us. There's no weapon, there's no circumstances, there's nothing that can hurt us. We are eternal. And our relationship with Krishna, which is the source of our happiness, is eternal. And there's absolutely nothing. It's not possible, unless we turn away from it, that's another thing. But it's always there.
Material happiness is random. I mean, you don't actually know until you've done something if it's going to make you happy.
Oh, that's very nice. Okay, it's kind of random. You said you're not even sure. You know, even something you've done 50 times before and it's made you happy, you're not sure if this time it's going to work or not. Isn't it? Right? You know, you have your favorite place to go, you always have a good time, but sometimes you don't. And you have a good friend and you hang out with them, but maybe sometimes you get an argument and you come home and you're miserable. Or whatever, you know, even some food you like, and somehow the cook burnt it this time. You just don't know. It may not work. It's not reliable, is it? Right? We were hearing yesterday that Krishna is dependable. Krishna is very dependable. Material happiness is not dependable. Yeah, something else.
Often the desire is more enjoying than the actual thing.
The in material life, our idea of what we're going to enjoy is often greater than the thing, right? Well, this brings us to another big difference, that material happiness is all based on distress. And this relates to the Bhogatyaga principle. In other words, I can't enjoy food unless I'm what?
Hungry.
Is hunger pleasant? No. Maybe very slight hunger. But hunger is not pleasant. But if I'm not hungry, food just... Have you ever noticed that food tastes much better when you're really hungry? You know, basically, the hungrier you are, the better the pleasure. And as you eat and the hunger abates, your pleasure goes down. Is sleeping fun if you're not tired? You know, sometimes parents say to little children, go to bed as a punishment. You don't want to go to bed because you're not tired. Sleeping is a pleasure when you're tired. This is the reason, by the way, that people indulge in things like pornography. Because the only way that people can enjoy sexual activities is to feel lusty, which is miserable. So one has to feel some misery in order to experience some pleasure. So what is the pleasure then? What is it actually? It's simply a temporary taking away of the misery. It's not a positive pleasure. And it's a pleasure that forces us, if we want it, to be miserable. We must. If you say, I want to enjoy the material world, and you're signing a contract to spend a good portion of your time in misery, otherwise there's no pleasure. Does that make sense? Can anyone think of any pleasure that you don't have to be miserable to enjoy it? I mean, even friendship. It's much more enjoyable if you've had some periods of solitude and loneliness, isn't it? Interesting, isn't it? Spiritual happiness is not like that. Spiritual happiness is a positive pleasure that's not dependent on any pain to set it off. And that's one reason why people often think that spiritual pleasure must be boring. Okay, so I'm told we have to stop. So what I'm going to do is stop what we're doing right now. What?
7 to 10.
Okay. Let's see if there's any other major thing that I wanted to... Okay, well, let me talk about just a couple other things, and then I'll get to my ending, which is the most important. So, material happiness is not experienced directly. Material happiness is something like you take a photograph, like you have photographs in your office of you with the Queen and the Prime Minister. Yeah? I assume that's to impress certain guests, although they'll give money or something. Sure, it works. But that's like, you know, we take a picture. People take a picture of themselves with their family. Or they take a picture of themselves at a vacation or something, and they have it on their wall or on their computer, and they say, look how happy I am in that picture. So all material happiness is something like that. Krishna says it comes from mental concoction. We're not experiencing it directly. We're just witnessing it. Okay, think about people who watch a movie. When you watch a movie, you feel happy. You feel physically even. Isn't it? You experience the emotions in your body. You're reading a book. When the character is in trouble, your heart beats faster and you may perspire. And when the character gets some wonderful thing, you feel, don't you feel? Right? But are you directly experiencing that? No, we call that vicarious experience. I'm experiencing it through the character. So all material happiness is like that. I, the soul, am not experiencing it. It's experienced by the body and the mind, and I'm watching, and I'm thinking, yes, that's me doing those things. And this is one of the main reasons why material happiness is not satisfying. How many people here have ever eaten something in a dream? How many people have ever had a dream where you ate something, you're eating something? How many of you have ever drunk water in a dream? You ever had a dream of drinking water? You know, I particularly find that if I take a little rest on a fast day, I'll dream that I'm eating. That's usually a really good feast. And somehow when I'm dreaming that I'm eating, I eat an awful lot in my dreams. A few times I've gone to sleep when I was thirsty, and I can recall even some dreams where I was taking gallon jugs of water, you know. And even in the dream I was thinking, what's going on here? Why am I still thirsty? Because I wasn't actually drinking. I wasn't actually eating. Right? You dream you're eating and you wake up and you're still hungry. But it's interesting because if you dream you're eating, you can taste the food. Isn't that funny? You know, you're eating a pakora in the dream. You experience the taste sensation. In our dreams, don't we feel like we're experiencing what's happening? But we're not really. And therefore, we're not satisfied. Our hunger doesn't really go away. Our thirst doesn't really go away. Well, the happiness we're enjoying externally is exactly the same. It's another kind of dream. So that we're thinking, I'm eating, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita 5th chapter. But we're not really doing anything at all. We're just witnessing. Please watch the person who walks behind me here. Danny is going to do it anyway, so there's no point. Actually, they say that especially never compete with babies and animals. If there's any of those in the class, you just have to be quiet and let everybody look at you. So when spiritual happiness is experienced directly by the soul, by ourselves, it's something that we're actually doing. We're not just watching it. And I think I talked about this, but just to be explicit, that because everything's temporary and because we can be taken away at any moment, all material happiness is mixed with fear. Prabhupada talked about sweet rice mixed with sand. So any time that we are enjoying anything, just like we're about to take prasad, so when you're taking prasad, let's say that there was somebody standing behind you, and the person standing behind you said, at some point during this meal, I'm going to grab this plate away and run with it, and you won't get it back. So while you're eating, are you going to be able to really enjoy eating? No. Our whole life is like that all of the time. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, there's somebody standing behind you going, at any minute, I'm going to take this away. And I'm not going to give you a warning necessarily. There's that story about Damocles. You know the story of the sword of Damocles? Damocles was a great king, and he was enjoying material opulence, and his friend said, oh, you're so fortunate, you have so much pleasure in life. He was envious. He said, I wish I were the king. Damocles said, okay, fine. Why don't you be king for a day? He used to have a TV show like that, I was a little girl, queen for a day. That's probably way before any of your time. Anyway, so he said, all right, you can be king for a day. So his friend comes and gets the crown and he's sitting at the royal banquet and he's enjoying and dancing girls and people are singing his praises and, you know, he's, oh, this is great. And then he looks up and he sees that there's a sword hanging from the ceiling by a tiny little thread. And he looks at his friend Damocles and he says, what's that? He says, that's part of being king. He said, when you're king, you're surrounded by enemies. We may challenge you and kill you at any moment. He said, I think you can have your job back. So, material life is like that. All right. Yes.
For eating, Master Chan, happiness when you're eating the Mahaprasad.
Ah, but that's different. One can be eating Mahaprasad mostly in materialistic consciousness, but it is still waking us up. But ultimately, somebody who's fully awake, they are eating Mahaprasad in spiritual consciousness, and that is directly perceived by the soul. Just like with chanting, who here went to my class in Germany about the different levels of speech and the different levels of chanting? Who went to that class? So there is a level of chanting on which the soul is directly chanting. So who can remember that? The first level of chanting, Vaikari Bhak, is just with the... Who can remember? Just a word, just the mouth. And then Majjhima Bhak, you're chanting with the mouth and the... Mind. Mind. And then Pasyanti Bhak, you're chanting with the mouth, the mind, and the... No, not yet. Feeling. Intelligence. Yes. Yes. With desire. Ichcha Shakti. And Paravak, you're chanting with the mouth, the mind, the desire, and soul. That is the platform of soul. So Premnam, when one is chanting Premnam, one is directly chanting with the soul. The soul is chanting. And there's, at that point, there's one in one's relationship with Krishna. And two people are sitting side by side, and one is just chanting with the mouth, and one is chanting actually a soul. And it may appear externally. Chanting with the mouth is supposed to bring us to those other stages, but that's a whole other gospel. Anyway, so then the final question is here. How do I get it? Now, I know for a fact that most of us here, or some of us here, even after this whole discussion, are still not 100% convinced that we don't want material happiness. We might feel that way intellectually right now. We might say, yes, yes, after this whole discussion, I don't want material happiness. But I guarantee that many of us, we're still thinking like that. Or we may think we want spiritual happiness, and we discover as we chant that really what we're looking for is something else. So when one becomes 100% convinced that they don't want material happiness, then one has a great adhikar, or a great right to engage in devotional service. Detachment is very, 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 very important. Because otherwise we will have, as one, I think, otherwise we won't have the interest to engage in spiritual happiness. But let's assume that we have at least some interest in spiritual happiness. I won't ask for a show of hands, but think for a minute. Just think yourself. Do I have some interest in getting spiritual happiness? Maybe it's negative. Maybe I'm just a little tired of material happiness. Maybe what I'm really looking for is better material happiness. And I've heard that spiritual happiness is better, so I'm going for it that way, but that's a start. But if we have some desire for spiritual happiness, how do we get it? How do we get this spiritual happiness? I know that if I want my material happiness, I save my money and I go to the hypermarché. I go to the big Walmart of the material world and I stay there for many, many lifetimes shopping. I already know that. I know that's the way that I get my material happiness. And I come home and maybe there's a few things I can use for a while until they wear out. So we all know the process for getting material happiness. What's the process for getting spiritual happiness? Yes.
Doing time of the sin.
Doing the what? I'm not going to comment. Yes.
Associating the Dilma already spiritually happy.
Oh, okay. So we were saying that in each that there is acharyas and there's instructions. So I should hang out with people who have it, right? If I want it, let me be with people who have it. Sounds like a good idea. Something else, yes. To hear and chant. Well, when we hear about Krishna, we become attracted to him. We have to hear both things. We have to hear what's wrong with material life and what's good about spiritual life. If you only hear about what's bad with material life, then you'll try to just become nothing. And if you only hear about good with spiritual life, you may not recognize illusion. One has to do both. Yes?
To get spiritual happiness when you love Krishna and God, but you first got to appreciate him. So it's first by understanding him and appreciating his qualities, and then the spiritual happiness will just naturally come.
It will now, because really we already have that spiritual happiness. We already have love of Krishna. It's just covered. So as we hear about Krishna, and as we learn to, as you were saying, appreciate Krishna, gradually that love will fructify, it will develop in time. What else do we have to do to get... Somebody wasn't said something, please. Wait, don't be afraid. If you say something that's not exactly perfect, it's not like there's some exam here, you know. Yes?
An experience I had recently was that when we had the summer marketing for book distribution, then whenever you hear about book distribution, if we all talk about the ecstasy of book distribution and the bliss of book distribution, the great happiness of book distribution, and sometimes people go out looking for that bliss and have a very disappointing experience because they're really focused on just experiencing the bliss of book distribution. And what I was thinking the last time I was out was that let's really forget the bliss. Forget the happiness. Perform the service. And naturally the happiness will be yours. But if you go out and you're just there, when am I going to get the ecstasy? When am I going to get the bliss? Am I going to be blissful in this kirtan? Forget it. Just be in the moment. And just do what you're supposed to be doing. And the natural point, you don't have to search for it, it'll come looking for you.
Ah, thank you. Did everyone hear a joyous report? Because isn't that a difference between material and spiritual happiness? Because material happiness is eye-focused. So we can go for spiritual things with the same eye-focus. And then you say, why doesn't it work? Right? Like playing with prasadam. Am I eating prasadam like an animal or am I eating prasadam in service? Of course, we start out with eye-focus. I mean, we can't help it. The beginning devotee starts out like that. But yes, to be kind, why does book distribution bring so much happiness, or any kind of preaching bring so much happiness? Because it's directly pleasing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But it's very interesting also, there was a conversation and one conference on the internet, and the devotee was asking, you know, well, if we don't break Ekadasi at a particular time, do we still get the benefit? Another devotee responded, we don't get the benefit from rituals. We get the benefit from Krishna. And Krishna said, you know, I want you to follow this way and that way. But it's not that the thing in and of itself is giving us some benefit. That's a fruit of mentality. It's actually karma mimamsa also. Prabhupada said this in regard to this one devotee who became very offensive and critical and was saying, oh, I'm a great sadhu because I'm chanting 64 rounds and I know that if I chant 64 rounds, then I will get Krishna praying. And Prabhupada said, this is karma mimamsa. Thinking if I do this and this and this and this and this, you know, then Krishna will be obligated. But yeah, we should focus on pleasing Krishna. It's a fact. And just think, how can I serve Krishna? How can I please Krishna? To absorb ourselves in service. The key is, as Prabhupada has said many times, and his Guru Maharaj said, not to try to see Krishna, but to have Krishna see you. So in a university, in a business, how do you get the notice of the superiors? You do something wonderful, right? You get a perfect grade on all your papers, and then the dean of the uni calls you and says, I want to see you. Or you do something exemplary in your work, and then the boss says, oh, well, who's this person who's making extraordinary sales of, you know, our plumbing devices? And calls you into the office. So really, we are trying to attract Krishna, and I'll speak about this more day after tomorrow with how to control the mind. But we are trying to attract Krishna, the all-attractive. We are trying to attract Krishna. And the thing that attracts Krishna is loving service. And really, when we are chanting is not a ritual to make us happy. Like book distribution too. It's not a ritual to make us happy. In fact, that's one of the offenses, thinking it's a ritual. So we may think like this, okay, if I chant my 16 rounds every day, or I'm going to start with 2 rounds or whatever, and I just do this every day, then it will be my formula. You know, and I'll be, no, it's just a way to be with Krishna. And of course, when you're with Krishna, then you're unlimitedly happy. So to get spiritual happiness, we should just want to be with Krishna and serve Krishna and focus our attention on how to make Krishna happy. And if we find that in serving Krishna we're not feeling happiness, then probably we have been thinking again, how can I use Krishna to satisfy my senses? which is what we're doing in the material world. We're using Krishna's energy, which is in one sense also Krishna, to satisfy my senses. And we can try to do that. Most religious systems are like that, aren't they? Doesn't matter whether you're Hindu or Christian or Muslim or whatever. People are praying to God, dear God, please satisfy my senses. So we are trying to satisfy Krishna's senses. So today I'd like to ask each of you, pick one thing. You can pick everything too, but pick at least one thing, one service that you're doing today. Whether you're going to be doing some more chanting, or even when you're taking prasad, or just about to take prasad, or any service you're doing today, and the whole time you're doing that service, just be meditating on Krishna, I want to please you. Krishna, I want to serve you. And really thinking about Krishna, as the forms in which Krishna has appeared at this particular temple are especially attractive. I think they're especially attractive because the devotees here must serve them with very one-pointed love. That's my conclusion. I've never seen such, never, I've seen such one-pointed devotion to the temple deities as I see here. And so the deities are really, they're reciprocating with the devotees, and they're really displaying very attractive feathers. Mm-hmm. Isn't that Krishna's in this field? It's amazing. So, and while we're doing some service, one can be thinking about how does Balaram look? Amazing. Or how does Krishna look all the way leaning to Radharani? And really put your, just pick one thing you're doing, even if it's just 10 minutes or half an hour, and really absorb yourself in Krishna. And then tomorrow, you know, either take that same thing and expand the time or pick two things. So gradually, over a period of time, 24 hours a day, whatever you're doing is in service and you're dedicating to Krishna. Is that all right? Is that doable? Can we do that? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Great Srila Mataji ki.
Pandavasena ki.